WCHD 3 Detroit, KMPS HD 3 Seattle, WBMX HD 3 Boston,
and on AOL Radio
and Yahoo Launchcast, CBS Radio's The New Sky.
This is the Spirit Guide Network. A unique voice in the paranormal world. From aliens to angels, demons to holy encounters, ghosts to near-death experiences, and from shadow people to visions. Explore the paranormal and more. Heidi Hollis is The Outlander. Call Heidi Hollis now.
248-545-SOUL.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
Oh my God, you guys have landed on another Monday with me. Hey there, you guys. You are listening to Heidi Hollis, The Outlander. So welcome to the show. I always have to tell people what the show's about because they're like, who the heck is that? Well, guess what? This show is about bringing outlandish and interesting topics to the forefront. From aliens to angels, ghosts, demons, holy encounters, shadow people, Bigfoot, to UFO trace evidence, and then some. I always say, if it's weird, we're here. Personally, I am someone who has been there, seen that, experienced it, freaked out, found some answers, wrote about it, and now I hope to help others to do the same and understand various parts of our strange world. To learn more about me, you can visit my main website, which is at www.HeidiHollis.com, which links off into my many other websites. Then there's YouTube. Just go to YouTube and just put Heidi Hollis. I think you'll find me somewhere lingering around there. And, of course, there's Facebook. Put number one in front of my name, Heidi Hollis, and you will find me somewhere, somehow. I want to make this show someplace everybody, anybody, anything could come and share and vent, ask questions, and get advice on anything out of the ordinary. So, if you have questions, concerns about anything outlandish or the topic at hand, contact us here at 248-545-SOUL, which is 7685, or instant feedback me. You have to go to newskyradio.com and click on that little area that says instant feedback and send your questions on through. You know, if you're kind of bashful and you don't want to ask me live. Also, I don't think people realize this, but I answer a lot of email. I answer a lot of questions. And I do that also on what I call my Outlandish Corner, where I address your personal experiences or questions with the strange world around us. And you can always reach me at the Facebook page, which is one Heidi Hollis, or email me at HeidiHollis@gmail.com. Did you get enough? You know what my name is? I think you do. So anyways, we're going to trickle on over here to what I call the Outlandish Corner to address some of the concerns that are out there. And I got a very interesting question that I have never had posed to me before in the midst of this very interesting encounter. I'm sorry, I'm choking tonight. anyways, here we are. It says, hi, I haven't really ever spoken to anyone about my encounter, I guess you would call it, but recently I feel like I have begun to come to terms with it, and I guess I understand it. At the time when I was 18, I'm now 21, I just dismissed what I experienced to be a nightmare. At the time, I thought it was, but there was a pretty real part of me who thought it wasn't just a dream. So as I said, my encounter occurred when I was 18. I was in bed, and it would have been about 2:30 a.m. or maybe 2 a.m. This is when I suddenly awoke to see a man in a hat and in a suit or cloak standing around 5 meters from my window at the garden fence. He was all black with a shining aura, I guess you'd call it. As soon as I saw him, he disappeared. I went back to sleep, but woke up about 10 minutes later, and he was standing at my window looking in at me. Ugh, don't you just get chills when you hear that kind of stuff? Again, when I woke up to see him, he disappeared quickly. At this point, I was extremely distressed and worried. I went back to sleep finally, but about 10 or 15 minutes later, I woke up again, and he was standing at the foot of my bed. Oh, gosh, it just gives me chills, even more chills. At this point, I've become extremely distraught and called my sister. I was too afraid to go back to sleep. I was literally crying and anxious. My sister then called my dad, who came upstairs to check on me. I am from Australia. Woo! That's my neck of the woods. That's not where I am right now, but I loved Australia. I lived there for a little bit. And at the time, I lived in the city of Albury, but now I live in Melbourne. Oh, that's where I was. I came across your page after Googling what I saw. I guess I'm becoming to understand what I saw the older I've become, perhaps. I'm also 21 male and gay. I read somewhere gay men have more encounters, more so than straight men. Is this true? Thanks, Hamish. Well, hello there, Hamish. Thank you for writing from down under there in Melbourne. And I used to live on Flemington. Love that city. Love, love, love that city. It seems like a lot of Aussies are tuning in to the show, which is cool. I love it. It's very cool. I guess it would be difficult to make a call in overseas that far, but you guys can always instant feedback. Hello. But I like the letters. It's good. It's good. It sounds like, Hamish, that you had an encounter with what I've dubbed to be called the Hat Man, which is this dark character that you mentioned. He looms around in a hat, cloak, or trench coat. Sometimes he's clean-shaven or he has a goatee. If you see his eyes, they may be black or red by some accounts. And he's generally pretty tall, thin, and highly intimidating. He can also be quite pale or olive-toned, some people say. It could be that, you know, he seems intimidating because so many people see him at quite a disadvantage, just as you did while laying down trying to get some sleep. So, but a lot of people truly, truly feel darkness emitted from this guy. So it's a strange thing, and it doesn't always happen just because they're laying down. But Hamish, you didn't let on what you meant by your somehow understanding your encounter more as you become older. I'm wondering if you mean you realize this is something that was real and really happened, or this is something dark you don't want to have in your life, or I don't know. I mean, kind of left that open-ended. But for sure, this Hat Man guy is as dark as they come, and he's not something you would want to keep around. And he is a very real phenomenon that I wish you nor anyone else had ever had to experience. You're all the way in Australia. It's very, very common occurrence here in the United States. And I've talked to a lot of people from around the globe that are also describing the same creepy guy. But it sounds like this experience that you had was something in the past. And I'm hoping that he and anything else negative stays in the past. So I don't think you've had any recent encounters. But if you had, please do write me about it. And we could talk further. Now then, you mentioned something interesting. You mentioned that you're gay and asked if being gay somehow makes you and other gay men have more encounters than straight men. I'd like to know where you read that at, because I can honestly say that I've never, ever heard this before. This is news to me. To me, it's nearly equivalent to saying, like, only people with blue eyes are more likely to see the true blue of the sky, if that makes any sense. It's about as much sense as that. I don't know if we could discriminate paranormally with gay versus straight experiencing the paranormal. That just makes my head spin. So I really, really don't think that sexual orientation has anything to do with whether or not people experience the paranormal. So though I don't have any research here on my computer to tell me that that is so, but I would like to know who would go around and ask that question. But interesting, very interesting. But one odd pattern that I will discuss, and it has nothing to do with sexual orientation. But I have noticed that people who are artistically inclined do tend to pay attention more to their surroundings than others, if that makes sense. Oh, sounds like we've got some feedback going on here. Okay. All right. There we go. That's quieter. It's people that are paying more attention to their surroundings more than others. People that are more artsy fartsy, I guess you could say. An example. It's almost like saying while an artist is painting a forest or something, the artist is observing every detail of the forest, and while taking it in, they tend to take in all that the forest has to offer, if you know what I mean. So if there's something paranormally there, they may kind of observe it, I think, more than the next person, versus somebody that's aiming to hike through the mountain that's somewhere hidden in that forest, if you know what I mean. So it's just a little different. not because they're gay or anything like that. Just I think artists, I've found that artists are a lot more apt to see such things like that. It's just my observation. So there you have it. Well, I hope that this was helpful to you, Hamish, and that this has given you a little understanding, even more so, to whatever it is that you've experienced. I don't think that you were singled out because of sexual orientation. The Hat Man is nobody positive. If he would ever turn or rear his ugly head your way again, I'd say kick him to the curb. He is nothing good, nothing positive. So there you have it. Now, Hamish, I have to ask you a favor. All the way over there in the land of Oz, you need to go and share your experience with one other person. You said in the beginning of this letter that you don't usually share your experience, your encounter with anybody. Well, there's something called the Paranormal Pledge that I'm kind of putting out there, that people need to own up to what it is that they've experienced and at least enlighten one other person in this world of ours that the paranormal exists. And, you know, how else are we going to learn from all these odd things that are going on unless we piece together the puzzle? And we need all the pieces to the puzzle that we can to try to solve it. Keeping it to ourselves really is of no benefit to anybody. And if it's something dark, then it wins, because it kind of closeted you in a sense. You seem to be proud of who you are and sharing, you know, about being gay. I kind of feel like, you know, people that have experienced the paranormal kind of hold things back and don't share what it is that they experienced, or, you know, it's a part of who they are. It's a part of their experience. So I think it's important that, you know, we all that have experienced the paranormal do share that other part of us, because it's important. I really feel that it's important. So I have a Facebook page. If you type in Paranormal Pledge on Facebook, you will come across this beautiful group that I created where people just share about their experiences, give some insight, comment, and keep it friendly, because if it gets ugly, they're going to be booted off, man. I don't care. I'm just kidding. Well, no. Why have the negativity? Who needs that, right? Okay, so I hope that helps you. And, you know, feel free to write me again if there's something else going on and if there's other things you'd like to understand about your experience, Hamish. And, you guys, we are in for a super-duper-duper treat. We have Michelle M. Deschamps. I hope I'm saying that right. We're going to be talking about UFO trace landings. Ooh, this is going to be good. You guys, you are listening to Heidi Hollis, the Outlander, on Spirit Guide Radio, powered by CBS. We will be right back.
Are you suffering from little sleep, high blood pressure, or physical pain? Or are you just overwhelmed and stressed out from your daily routine? The answer may be Reiki. Reiki is a Japanese technique that reduces stress and promotes well-being by triggering the body's natural healing abilities to improve health. Reiki Master Heidi Harrison has more than 20 years' experience treating clients with a variety of emotional, mental, and physical disorders. Heidi practices Reiki by phone for clients around the country. Start improving your health now at Your Reiki Journey with Heidi at 425-776-2034 for a soulful gift of healing right in the comfort of your own home. Begin your Reiki journey for peace and well-being with Heidi at Your Reiki Journey at 425-776-2034. Again, contact Heidi at 425-776-2034 to set up your appointment or find us at www.yourreikijourney.wordpress.com.
Bent knees, folded hands, head bowed. This is how I was taught to pray, but still I didn't feel satisfied in my communication with God. Luckily, one day I had an encounter with an angel who showed me how to pray as the angels did. I'm Heidi Hollis, and in my new book, Picture Prayers, I share my personal account of how an angel showed me a vision of others praying and how words can sometimes fall short of their meaning while in prayer. I was shown how to capture all I feel about anything in my life and how to package that into a picture to send to God, and how God uses similar methods to talk to us too. That's why I called it Picture Prayers. Picture prayers changed my entire communication with God forever. I've become so confident in my picture prayers that I now feel I'm in constant communication with God where nothing is ever left out. Picture prayers changed my life, and I know it can change yours too. Get your copy of Picture Prayers at your local bookstore or go to pictureprayers.com. That's pictureprayers.com.
Discover your spirit. Listen to Spirit Guide Radio, where spiritual guides nourish your soul every weekday. Heidi Hollis, The Outlander, The Zodiac Girls with Solaris, Laura, and Kira. Laura Lee's Spirit Salon. Ask Dr. Doug with Dr. Doug Lira. Life by Number with Celeste and Keeping Life Real with Dr. Susan J. Stone. It's Spiritually Speaking Radio, Spirit Guide Radio, at 11 p.m. Eastern on New Sky Radio, newskyradio.com. New horizons, no boundaries. New Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Back to the Spirit Guide Network. More from Heidi Hollis, The Outlander. Call us now.
248-545-7685. Welcome back, everybody, to me, Heidi Hollis, The Outlander. You've landed on my Monday. I own this Monday. Remember, always, if it's weird, we are here giving you advice and insight on outlandish topics. The phone lines are open at 248-545-SOUL, which is 7685, or instant feedback me with your questions at newskyradio.com. On to my guests for the evening. I have Michelle M. Deschamps, who is a MUFON. I hope I didn't slaw that. Deschamps? Deschamps. Deschamps, I like that name. Is MUFON's Provincial Section Director for Sudbury, Ontario, Canada. Since July 1974, he has had 27 separate UFO sightings, including two captured on video. He has appeared on numerous radio and television programs, and he has contributed valuable information to researcher Jan Aldrich's Project 1947, which earned him an acknowledgement of his work in Jan's book, Project 1947, a preliminary report on the 1947 UFO sighting wave. He continues to inform the public about UFOs and flying saucers by lecturing on the subject and has written several articles in various publications. UFO landings and trace evidence is also a topic he delves into and will be discussing with us here tonight. Welcome, Michelle M. Deschamps. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks.
Wonderful, wonderful. Your website, I want to put it out there so people will go and kind of follow along with what it is we're going to be talking about this evening. Can you put out your website for us?
Yes, it's www.NORUFO.com.
Wonderful. All right. So everybody tune in, go there, check it out, because he's going to be discussing some of the cases that he's come across. And what are some of the more fascinating landing trace evidence UFO sites that you've come across?
Well, one of the famous cases in the States took place in 1971 in November in Kansas. And it was investigated by a man by the name of Ted Phillips out of Missouri, who has collected over 4,000 UFO physical trace cases from 91 countries.
Yeah, I know that guy. He's a very nice guy.
Yeah, very nice. I believe he personally investigated 500 of those cases, but he's got, I think he's got all 4,000 cases listed on his website. And some of the recurring physical traces are also found in some, well, at least the one particular landing trace that I investigated back in 1991, which took place on Manitoulin Island in Georgian Bay, part of the Great Lakes.
Cool.
And the whole thing was kind of cloak and dagger. Mm. I had gotten word, I was told that there was a local radio personality that was doing a show about crop circles, and she mentioned on the air that there were a couple of crop circles found in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, Manitoulin Island is about 2 hours away from here, so it's not really directly around this area. But I called her up and I said, well, where's the evidence for this? And she says, well, she knew somebody who had taken photos. And when I met the guy at his apartment on a very dark night, he gave me a strip of negatives. And I couldn't very well see what was on there, but once I had the photos developed, I realized, wait a minute, this is not a crop circle. This is like on hard limestone and rock. Like we're talking like 3/4 inch gravel layer on top of, I thought maybe at the time a lake bed, but it was I couldn't see how it could be a gravel pit where trucks would go in and haul gravel out of there, but it was mm-hmm. solid limestone covered by a 3/4 inch gravel. And these two particular areas where the gravel was blown away basically looked like two donuts, each measuring 6 to 9 feet in diameter and 16 feet from center to center, because both circles were in close proximity to each other. And I just found that weird.
Oh, God, yeah, I'd say so.
But it took a year before I got there. It survived an extra winter. And then the next spring in 91, this occurred in mid-September of 1990.
Okay.
And I went out to investigate in June, and it was still visible. It was still there. And even after surviving one winter, the thing that I found strange was that the sand and the gravel was solidified. It was stuck together. You had to use a scraper to literally scrape it off the limestone, which is not normally what would happen if it was like mud that was caked on or whatever. And there was some light mud that was caked on also. And I found it weird that I can just sweep with a broom and nothing would come off except the loose pebbles here and there. I subsequently went back 2-3 times, and September 1993 was the last time I went there, and I took a broom to the area and everything came right off. And the thing that makes me a little bit ticked off was that I never took samples. I mean, I couldn't visibly see anything that was holding the sand and the gravel together onto the limestone surface, but
mm-hmm.
I should have taken samples because it was my first case like that. I never thought I'd be investigating a landing case.
Right.
But
well,
it fell on my lap, and at first, well, people would say, well, it's fake. You know, somebody hoaxed it. Well, the thing is, the two donut-shaped indentations, as I call it, were found a quarter mile outside of a small town named called Stay on Manitoulin Island, but yet it wasn't visible from the main road. It was encircled by some trees in the woods, and you had to go and drive into a path in the woods in order to come to this large 80 to 90 foot clearing where this limestone bed was located at. So, had it been a hoax, I would have placed it right next to the highway where most people would have seen it.
Right. You know, there's something I wanted to contribute to your story there, because I'd actually come across something that was a little out of the ordinary that kind of reminds me of your story. In Dundee, Wisconsin, I have a lot of good friends that live there in the area and or come down a lot to the area, and it's big hotbed of UFO activity. And one of my good friends, Tim, he always is over there photographing oddities that are going on in the night sky. And one day he came across this area on this lake over there called Long Lake, and the reeds were kind of matted down in the middle of the lake. And he kind of went closer to the area, and he found he was able to walk in the middle of the lake in this area that was circular and pressed down. And what had happened, the mud and gook from the bottom of the lake had rose up into this hardened circular mass, encompassing the reeds, and it looked very much like a UFO or something, you know, with a lot of heat had hovered or landed there and kind of made a little landing base for itself, but it had hardened the mud to such a hard stance in the middle of the lake that you could walk on it, and they took pictures of it, but I don't recall anybody ever getting any trace evidence either in any collections of the soil, but it just, you know, just kind of jogged that memory in me like, oh my gosh, it sounds very much like that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, what's more fascinating was that at the time, well, not too long ago, I was collecting the News Clipping Service, which came out of Arkansas, which put out like 20 pages a month of UFO clippings from all over the world. It was divided into three sections. The first section was American news, and then the second section was foreign news, and the third section was Fortean news, named after Charles Fort, who was investigating all kinds of other weird phenomena. It included sightings of the Virgin Mary, Bigfoot reports, animal mutilations, and so on. In one article that I saw in there, I mean, I had sent in the pictures I had gotten from Manitoulin. After I saw that a similar circle was found in Denver, North Carolina, 11 years later.
Wow.
And to show the same physical evidence, and as Ted Phillips says, after a while it gets boring. You get one physical evidence after one physical trace case from after another, and it becomes so boring, so consistent after a while, you get bored. And he's able to sort of put an idea, an approximation of what size of UFO would actually leave that trace, because after a certain time, after having seen so many cases, he's able to tell what kind of size of object might have left the trace behind, which is pretty fascinating itself. But having two similar sightings like that, two trace cases from three different countries separated by 11 years, I mean, it's like the crop circle phenomena. You'd have to have an awful lot of people with frequent flyer miles going around all over the place creating these things.
Well, yeah, you know, the naysayers like to say, well, of course somebody saw it on the news and then they went and they replicated what had taken place. And it's like, this stuff does not make the news. I'm sorry. I hate to tell you, but no. I mean, it's a crying shame, but, you know, there's one time once again in Dundee, Wisconsin. Oh gosh, there must have been about 100 people there and several people with camcorders, video recorders, all videotaping this UFO going overhead, contacted all the news stations there are, and you think that any of them got back to us to put that on air? No. No, it's just not good enough. So I hear you on that. It's unbelievable how it goes on.
And it's frustrating because, Carl Sagan was famous for saying, where is the evidence? There's no evidence, therefore there can't be any reality UFOs. Well, the problem is that there's an awful lot of evidence. There's enough. If this were a court case, putting a man away for murder, there'd be enough evidence there to put him away for life without the possibility of parole. That's the kind of evidence we're talking about. The mounds is astonishing. Whether it's the documentary side of it, where I have like downloaded 5,000 Canadian UFO documents, the same ones that I find on those five microfilm reels that I bought from the National Archives in Ottawa, and so the physical trace case is along the same line. There's so much. It's so much. If it's well gathered and well collected, but also shared, which is the key. You would bring up all the rest of the people on this planet up to your level of knowledge concerning this, and then people would realize, you know, the governments have been lying about this for whatever reason, and this is something that is not privy to just themselves. The entire world should know about this, because this is going to be a cultural shock of such a large scale that it's going to happen one way or the other. The government can try to keep this secret, but something will open. If it's not them coming out saying it, it's the aliens showing up in mass. And unlike on Independence Day, you know, if there's the slightest inkling of possibility of time travel, if the aliens' intentions was to invade us and take us over, they would have done it a long time ago. Or they could go from now, go back in time at a time when we're more defenseless than we are now.
Exactly.
Exactly. So that's not their intentions whatsoever. I thought that some races might have been malevolent, but there's a good chance that I think they're all benevolent in one way or another.
Oh, gosh. Oh, we've got to get into that one. Well, we got to go to our next break. You guys, you're listening to Heidi Hollis Outlander on Spirit Guide Radio, powered by CBS. And we'll be back. We have to talk about this evil versus good alien stuff. We'll be right back.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Outlander, remembering always, if it's weird, we are here. We are speaking with Michelle Deschamps, talking about UFO landings and trace evidence. And just before break, you'd mentioned something about believing that perhaps all these UFOs and aliens that are visiting us are benevolent. And I'm curious what leads you to believe that, because I there are some little gray guys out there I really don't like very much. So I'm very curious to hear what your opinion is on that.
Yeah, well, by looking at some of the sketches that I have on my website even, it would lead credence to the fact that some of them may actually be malevolent. But I recently spoke to another contact on Facebook who's actually one of the first people who came out at the National Press Club in 2001 for a part of the Disclosure Project. And her name is Carol Rosen, and she worked at NASA under Wernher von Braun, and she had believed at one time that the that some of the races were malevolent, but now she's come to believe that they're all benevolent and all for a common goal. And I personally believe that there is a very aggressive and destructive race in the universe, it's probably us.
Ooh. Wow, smack to us, I guess. Yeah. I guess, you know, I'm under the impression that they're not so different from us, though. I mean, in some of the things that they're doing to people.
Yeah, yeah. Good and evil exists everywhere.
Right.
You're taking people against their will. And I'm sure there's been some permanent disappearances where a lot of people have never come back. But the thing is, it's like maybe there's a purpose behind it, but I didn't see a purpose in the Holocaust, for instance, so I didn't see a purpose in having 50,000 kids dying of starvation every year. So,
point taken, yes.
To me, the knowledge of having, see, it would put us in our place if we were to find out that we're not at the top of the heap in terms of intelligence. I think we would have to reevaluate where we stand as a race, but also part of, and realize that we're part of a larger community in space.
Or
and
the
go
food
from
chain.
There.
Yeah. Could be the food chain too, you know, that's a disturbing thought, well, Michelle, but I've heard some stories out there, let me tell you.
Whew. Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah, pretty nasty, mean, big, giant, green aliens that like to eat people. So, yeah, so I don't know.
The reptilian races, yeah, down in Brazil, the reptilian races are pretty aggressive. I mean, they'll use a green beam of light to stabilize the person and a red beam to try to grab onto them or something like that. And one man actually melted like a candle right in front of his wife.
Oh, yeah.
And so in South America now, they don't dare to go outside to smoke a cigarette even because the light of the cigarette actually seems to attract the UFOs coming straight down or something. So yeah, there may be those odd few ones that are really out to do something for their own benefit, and they don't care about us no more than they would care about a lab rat.
Yeah, that's my impression with some of them. But like you said, there are good and evil, and that's so true. You know, I wanted people to know what it is that you do with your, you know, who you are and what you do with your website, because you do a really, really phenomenal job with, you know, getting all this different information. Why don't you explain to the listeners how you accumulate some of the information that you have, and then we'll get on to one of your other cases.
Well, what's funny about the website, it first started off as a book manuscript. I wanted to write, and it was based basically on news clippings I found or gathered from 5 Northern Ontario newspapers that are on microfilm at our university. And from there, I started collecting a lot of reports from throughout high school. I created what I call my easy access book, and had all the sketches I copied and traced from different books. It's because I wanted to more or less gather everything onto one central database, which everybody's been talking about, but not necessarily creating, because you still have 50,000 different UFO websites out there. But unlike mine, you won't have them, I've scanned sketches from books, and I've made sure to protect myself legally by actually saying that it's an educational website and that there's no copyright infringement. And if and when possible, if let's say I have a scanned image of a DVD cover or whatever, I will actually, the title of the DVD, you click on that, and it takes you either to the actual website that sells it or to Amazon.com or Chapters or whatever. So basically, I'm giving these people free advertisement without them necessarily knowing about it. But at the same time, I'm posting all their work, like the pictures of the physical trace cases, the pictures of the crop circles, the pictures or sketches of the alien beings that have been visiting here. And I've had to separate those from the ones that perform the abductions from the ones that are only seen once. They're landing. They take flora samples, fauna, and then take off again at the sight of human beings. So I've had to place everything in the website because I was getting so frustrated at the lack of information. Some of the documentaries even today are using information that's 20 years old.
Of course. And you know, just, why not rehash up the past, huh?
You know,
like,
so,
nothing's new.
Yeah, there's tons of stuff that's new.
Yes.
But at the same time, and people say, well, how come you're using old photos on your website? It's because those photos have been analyzed to death, and they've had negatives with them. Today, if I were to place digital photos on there, anything can be doctored. But back then, the photos were more easier. It was easier to analyze them, and those are most of them there are listed. There are all classic cases, like McMinnville, Oregon, in 1950, Trinidad and Tobago, I think, or one of the islands off the coast of the Brazilian coast, 1957.
So
again.
Essentially, it's your site is just this massive, like. I mean, if you've got an interest or a question about any kind of UFO sighting or happening, you have a way for them to find the information they're looking for by going to your site. Can you give your website again? It's the acronym. Do you pronounce it like NUFORS or?
Yeah, I pronounce it NUFORS. It basically stands for Northern Ontario UFO Research and Study.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's www.n as in Normand. O, U, F, O, R as in research and S as in study.com.
Got it. Well, I want to hear about another case of UFOs landing. What else do you have for us?
Okay, well, in one of the documents I found on those microfilm reels that I bought from the National Archives, there's this one case from a small town of Galt, Ontario, in 1957, in July 1957. This is what it says. A great deal of excitement was generated in the community of Galt, Ontario, Canada in July 1957 when a group of frightened teenagers came within inches of a spaceship, quote-unquote. Jack Stevens, a very trustworthy young man, according to his parents and teachers, said the party of five had accidentally stumbled upon the object, complete with portholes, as it rested on two ball-shaped landing gear in a field outside town. Additional proof of the incident came after an analysis was made of the scorched earth discovered on the spot. Paul Hartman, a writer for the Galt Reporter, says the change in soil composition at the site was incredible. Topsoil dug up from the landing area glowed in the dark. Also, when grain samples from the burnt patch were studied under a microscope, it was found that they were healthier and sturdier than the samples taken from elsewhere in the field. Finally, the insects there had undergone a certain instability and peculiarity in character. Ants, where the saucer had touched down, were larger and stronger looking than their counterparts in untouched areas. The ant hills themselves, according to Hartman, were much higher than usual, and a spider which had accidentally found its way into a jar containing soil from the Galt UFO landing site had grown to about 10 times the normal size for this particular species.
These were evil aliens, Michelle. Evil. Okay. I'm sorry. I had to just shoot that off
there. Yeah. That's okay. That's this kind of horrible strangeness that people like Linda Howe talk about when you investigate a landing site or crop circle or even ice rings. I have another thing that's mentioned. It's funny. People seem to put crop circles and ice rings in the same bag, but I believe that ice rings, if people go, they'll eventually find their way there on my website. Ice rings, I believe, are actually caused or created by a hovering UFO that just slightly hovers just a few inches above the ice surface. And the ice surface, if you take a closer look, it's so thin, if somebody were to walk on there and gouge it out with a hammer and chisel, they would fall right through the ice.
Oh, wow. Gosh.
Yeah.
Oh,
now, that's my assumption.
I haven't heard too much about ice rings, but, you know, we're coming upon our last break, Michelle. We've got one more break. Isn't that something? Oh, gosh. Well, guess what, you guys? You're listening to Heidi Hell's Outlander on Spirit Guide Radio, powered by CBS. Give us a call at 248-545-SOUL, which is 7685, and we will be back to continue to speak with Michelle Deschamps. We'll be right back.
Enlighten, empower, enrich. This is CBS Radio's The New Sky. New horizons, no boundaries.
Discover your spirit. Listen to Spirit Guide Radio. where spiritual guides nourish your soul every weekday. Heidi Hollis, The Outlander, The Zodiac Girls with Solaris, Laura, and Kira. Laura Lee's Spirit Salon. Ask Dr. Doug with Dr. Doug Lira. Life by Number with Celeste. And Keeping Life Real with Dr. Susan J. Stone. It's Spiritually Speaking Radio, Spirit Guide Radio, at 11 p.m. Eastern on New Sky Radio, newskyradio.com. New horizons, no boundaries. New Sky Radio, powered by CBS.
Are you suffering from little sleep, high blood pressure, or physical pain? Or are you just overwhelmed and stressed out from your daily routine? The answer may be Reiki. Reiki is a Japanese technique that reduces stress and promotes well-being by triggering the body's natural healing abilities to improve health. Reiki Master Heidi Harrison has more than 20 years' experience treating clients with a variety of emotional, mental, and physical disorders. Heidi practices Reiki by phone for clients around the country. Start improving your health now at Your Reiki Journey with Heidi at 425-776-2034 for a soulful gift of healing right in the comfort of your own home. Begin your Reiki journey for peace and well-being with Heidi at Your Reiki Journey at 425-776-2034. Again, contact Heidi at 425-776-2034 to set up your appointment or find us at www.yourreikijourney.wordpress.com.
Bent knees, folded hands, head bowed. This is how I was taught to pray, but still I didn't feel satisfied in my communication with God. Luckily, one day I had an encounter with an angel who showed me how to pray as the angels did. I'm Heidi Hollis, and in my new book, Picture Prayers, I share my personal account of how an angel showed me a vision of others praying and how words can sometimes fall short of their meaning while in prayer. I was shown how to capture all I feel about anything in my life and how to package that into a picture to send to God, and how God uses similar methods to talk to us too. That's why I called it Picture Prayers. Picture Prayers changed my entire communication with God forever. I've become so confident in my picture prayers that I now feel I'm in constant communication with God where nothing is ever left out. Picture Prayers changed my life, and I know it can change yours too. Get your copy of Picture Prayers at your local bookstore or go to pictureprayers.com. That's pictureprayers.com.
CBS Radio's The Sky.
The Sky.
Back to the Spirit Guide Network. More from Heidi Hollis, The Outlander. Call Heidi Hollis now.
248-545-7685.
What a fantastic commercial we just got done listening to. Gosh, I just want to go out and get that book that chick was talking about. What was that, pictureprayers.com? Okay, so that was me. Okay, you guys, you're tuning into Heidi Hollis, The Outlander. The phone lines are open, and the instant feedback is always ready to take on your questions. In the meantime, we're going to continue to chat with Michelle Deschamps on UFO landings, trace evidence, and you're making some interesting points about giant spiders and big ants and all these lovely things. Michelle, just before we went to break, and something that you're kind of leaning towards that I'd heard Linda Howe had mentioned that, you know, some of these crop circles, like they're influencing the crops or they're destroying crops. And kind of hinting that, you know, the ones that are destroying are the evil aliens and the ones that are helping are the positive. What's your take and what is it that you're seeing when it comes to these kinds of cases?
I'm not sure about the crop circles, like in that sense of what Linda Howe is saying. As for me, the whatever energy emanates from the landed UFO, you'd think normally it would be radiation, because we'd be thinking radiation right away, because that's at the level of technology we're at, you know, nuclear. But our radiation is very, very toxic to the human body. Some of these, the technology of these UFOs use may be totally, totally different. Like, I had an uncle in northern Quebec who had an encounter, a late uncle, who had an encounter in 1981, and it was two small beings in the snow. It was standing in the snow, and the one had a stick or a probe in its hand, was poking at the snow like it didn't know what the hell it was. And the ship itself was a big ball of fire sitting in the snow. And yet when my uncle went out the next day, or soon after, there was no melted snow right down to the grass, which what you'd assume if it was fire as we know it.
Right.
And there was no footprints on the snow whatsoever, so no physical evidence in that of that sense. And so the physics, the technology is so out there, it's practically like magic.
Wow. That's something else.
Yeah. So it's not, you're lucky, you're very lucky if you happen to be a researcher who actually winds up with physical evidence in some of these cases but to relate to it in terms of what we know as technology may not always work out because these things are so advanced. They can manipulate light. I mean, I've heard that UFOs are part of the propulsion system actually uses neutrinos. And the funny thing is we actually own one of the three neutrino observatories in the entire world.
Mm.
Ours is at a 9,000 foot or 9,000 meters level at one of our deepest mine shafts. And it's funny because there was a daytime sighting of two flying saucers over that same site in 1961, and the neutrino lab, I think, was just built within the last 15 years or so. And I'm assuming that there would have been a lot of sightings even since then. And so you just don't know with the physics and science of flying saucers and UFOs and how they perform and what effect they leave on the environment. Now, the physical trace cases not just include traces on the soil. I mean, it affects plants. It affects if somebody's close. Sometimes some people have reported like a sunburn effect in the middle of the night if they happen to be close to a landed UFO. We're talking about all kinds of different effects, nausea, vomiting, loss of hair, like the famous case from Houston, Texas there with the Cash Landrum case of 1981.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lady eventually died of cancer, but.
Yes, I did hear about that. That was an awful case.
Yeah, exactly. And the more she got exposed more because she got out of the car. The other two, the other older lady and the young boy, they got less exposed because they were still in the car, but they still got some of the effect emanating from the energy emanating from the UFO.
Gosh, you know, it reminds me of how, you know, the early colonists wanted to clear the land of the natives and kind of gave these gifts of blankets that after they rolled in it with smallpox and killed off just nations of Native American tribes. You know, it's like there's no regard for some of the interaction that's going on between some of these UFOs versus others. Others can be so, you know, just beautiful, benevolent, you know, seeing it in the night sky or seeing it at a distance. And then you hear these horrible cases where, you know, this lady, poor lady, gets exposed and burned and dies from the exposure, the radiation that she was exposed to.
But it's not a defensive weapon, though. That's the thing. People think automatically that maybe the UFO is doing it purposely, but I think it's just a side effect of the propulsion system. You
think they're aware of their...
They may be aware of the danger it's causing to human life. I'm not exactly sure. If we had those answers, I wouldn't be doing the research.
Yeah, I'm sure they're aware. If they're so darn smart, they have to know they fried some people, you know?
Yeah.
It's awful. But so you've seen 27 UFOs yourself. I'm dying to hear what was one of your more fantastic sightings that you've had.
The more fantastic one I had, I must say, was my second sighting. I had a first sighting when I was 9, but years later when I was 20 something like that, I had a sighting near the radar base, which is no longer there. They even razed the building to the ground more recently because people would just go in there all the time. Somebody might get hurt. But that was like my Roswell to me. I'd go there and take a look at the night sky after I had the sighting there. And the object was, it came down, it was in the sky looking like Jupiter at its brightest at first when I first saw it. And I sketched it on my website in part, like from one location to another location to the final location where I saw it hovering next to the radar base. And my estimation was there was about 40 feet in diameter because through the binoculars, the next day I went back out in the daytime and it looked as wide as one of the parts of the building. And we measured the section of the building and we snuck up there ourselves.
Oh gosh, amazing. My goodness. Yeah. It kind of, you know, I don't think people realize the life-altering experience that can be when you see something so far out of the norm like that. What did it do to you?
It changes you. It's not... It's not at all. People assume it's like a 3-second car accident. You know, you get vague, you don't remember. This is something so out of the ordinary, it's etched in your mind until you're 67, 89, 100 years old. And if you're truthful to yourself and truthful to your friends, you're not going to change that story for that many years. And it's going to etch in your mind. When you look in people's eyes and they see something, their eyes get all glazy and stuff. You know it's changed their life. I've had people try to fool me and say that they've seen, and I can tell when they're not telling the truth, because this changes you so much. You reevaluate your life from then on. And I've had to do that several times. The first 10 seconds I had, I doubted myself, went through my checklist. And after that, I realized, you know, something is going on, and it's not man-made, and it's not illusion or drugs. I never took drugs, and I'm not an alcoholic. So.
Right. No, you know, for some reason, a lot of people that share with me their stories, they feel like they have to tell me, by the way, I don't do drugs, I'm pretty sane. You know, it's like, come on, you're talking to me. You don't have to tell me that, but it's very common. It's like one of the first things out of their mouths or in a letter. So, I mean, and you know, in the personal sacrifice, when you've had something that's happened like that and you start doing something like you've been doing for all these years, I mean, it becomes a part of a passion, a mission, and at a lot of personal sacrifice, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, and it's basically education, because I wouldn't want to have a little kid going from school to home and encountering a landed UFO and then coming home and telling his parents, and then his parents are calling him a liar and saying you didn't see it. I want to educate people to know that what he just saw is real. So he's not psychologically damaged from then on by what his parents are telling him or what the government is saying, you know.
All right.
He'll know the truth. And he's not a believer then. He's a knower because he's seen something.
I like the way that you're thinking. I'm with you on that. I'm one of those people just like you, just plugging away, trying to help people open their eyes. So, Michelle M. Deschamps, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun talking to you. And I want people to check out your website at nouforce.com, nouforce.com, to get this wealth of information under their belt. So, thank you, Michelle. I really appreciate you coming on.
You're welcome. Anytime.
All right. Well, guess what, everybody? My Monday night is ending, and I think the rest of your nights are ending, too. Remember, you can always catch me here every Monday, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. You've been listening to me, Heidi Hollis, the Outlander, on Spirit Guide Radio, powered by CBS. And remember, if it's weird, we're here. See you.